This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 12/11/92, and this is tape 7, side 1. I noticed that the legislature passed laws to allow for oil exploration on the coast. And since then, more recently, that's become more controversial. Do you remember the discussion at the time about that issue?
I don't remember that. Although, there again, you see, they're making the distinction between exploring and drilling and mining. And this was really for exploration. I never really thought it was much of an issue because all my understanding was that it really isn't much likelihood of oil being off the Oregon coast. And to my mind, you know, go ahead and explore and find out what we think is correct is correct. Then that puts it all to sleep instead of worrying about it all this time. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't recall that. There was something about mining the black sand or the sand at the mouth of the Columbia River, you know, because there was supposed to be some valuable, all this stuff washing down there.
Hmm.
But I don't think anything came of that either.
There was bill to allow International Paper Company to develop a paper plant on the coast, and also laws were passed to control agricultural picketing while perishable crops are being harvested. Was that an issue at all in Washington County, where you were representing them? Did you have farmers that approached you about the situation?
Well, I'm sure I did. I'm trying to think of timing. Maybe even later than that, because there was this legislation to allow strikes during harvest, but
right.
I think that was later, much later. I think I was in the Senate by the time that came up, and I remember that's the first time I ever met Vera Katz. She was up here with Cesar Chavez lobbying for this, and that was a very much of a issue with the farmers, that is, striking during the crop season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember that too much in regard to the picketing thing, but I'd have to guess my farmer friends weren't very happy with it.
Right. Did you meet Cesar Chavez or
I don't
speak with him?
Meeting him, no.
Uh-huh. The Oregon Technical Institute in Klamath Falls was given money to start. That was Harry Boivin's project, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I don't really remember that too much. I would say if I were going to apply, you know, my general feelings, I'd been supportive of it. I've been supportive of education and institutions of education, including private colleges and universities.
There were some people that felt that Klamath Falls really wasn't an appropriate setting for a technical institute, that it would have been better having it somewhere else. But do you?
There's always arguments on all
sure,
sides.
Yeah.
But I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you can tell me about your learning the ropes, the trial and error period that you went through in your first sessions in the legislature? Did you have any kind of mentors that or people that helped you through the hoops and in learning the process? Or
no, I think the only thing was this Young Turk bunch. You know, we usually have dinner together and we share our experiences, and you kind of learn almost by absorption, any problems that they would have had or I would have had, but we never discussed it as that kind of a subject. You just sort of osmosis it all,
right.
All developed, answering your question directly. No, you learn by getting beat up. Alf Lagle beat me up every time I knew he got on his feet. I'm dead in the water because he's going to get the votes and I won't. So you learn the strength of a majority.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how difficult it is when we talked about Grace Peck, and she wasn't the only one, that when you're debating, some people, they think you're debating them personally rather than a bill. Or how you vote against me, not the bill, that kind of thing. But no, I didn't have someone to get me by the hand and lead me through the process, not at all. Just sort of did it.
How would you summarize the 61 session? Was it?
It was sort of a peaceful session, as I recall, nothing earth-shattering.
You ran then in 1962 for another term. Why at this point were you running again? Was it pretty much the same reason as before?
I could see I could get some things done in committee. As remember, I told you earlier that you're going to get beat up on the floor on bills, but you surely can make bills better, or maybe even debate them in committee enough to keep them there.
You were on an interim tax committee then between the sessions.
Yeah.
Any other interim committees that you were on?
No, the only other interim committee I remember, and we'll get to it, is the out of the 1965 session, and that was the interim committee on public health.
On public health. Okay. Was there anything remarkable about your election in 1962, either the primary or the general election?
No, I don't remember when this fellow Bud ran, Bud Kyle. I don't recall which session it was. It might have been that one. I don't recall.
It was while you were in the House, though.
While I was in the House, right. That would have been the only time I would have really recalled even who my opponent was at this point in time.
When you're trying to make up a statement for the voters pamphlet, what things do you consider, and what did you do personally?
Well, that's a good question in the sense that the voters pamphlet politically is a very valuable tool, very much more than many politicians think it is. Maybe they do now recognize it, but certainly in those days there wasn't that much recognition of the value of it. And so we took it very seriously, always took it very seriously in all the campaigns that I've run. And there you just talk about your experience, what experience you've had, the kinds of things that you've done, the things you look forward to doing.
How was that election for the Republican Party in 1962?
Well, I can't remember, except that I know I was in the minority all the time I was there, so.
Yeah. You got back on to Food and Daring, which you've talked a little bit about.
Yes.
And about the balloon bread bill and milk, and also on Rules and Resolutions, which was the Speaker's Committee then, too, in 1963. And and then also on taxation, of course. Was there any legislation that came out of those committees that you worked on? Any particular issues that they dealt with?
Not at this stage, I can't remember.
You
know, I remember the timber tax bill, which passed in '61.
Right. You talked about that.
And we talked about that.
That was the House Bill 14.
Yes. I'm laughing because we took a trip somewhere, and they made sure that my room was 14.
Is that right?
They gave me a room of 14. The balloon bread thing was really interesting. I did mention about offering the only time I got offered a trade, but we didn't get into the subject itself. And you know, I didn't think about balloon bread. I'm not a shopper in the grocery store. Balloon bread, what the devil's balloon bread? And there was a law that related to it, and you had to do some kind of a labeling, if I recall, because it looked like a larger loaf of bread, but it would be only 1 pound. And that's where the balloon part of it came. That's why they call it balloon bread. And I can remember in room 50, which is our large hearing room, which is no longer used as a hearing room, I don't think it is, but we were sitting there. and up on, kind of up on a stage-like deal. And here was this long table in front of us with bread, just different bread across this whole table. And it was the issue, the Department of Ag was saying, look, we cannot, the way the law is written now, we cannot administer this law. We're going to lose in court every time.
Mm-hmm.
And as you recall, I told you, they said, you know, either repeal it or fix it, but don't leave it there on the books, because it's on the books, we have to do it by law, but we're going to lose every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so our decision was, do we want to repeal it or do we want to fix it? So that was the debate, should we fix it? And we decided, of course, to fix it.
And how did you fix it?
I don't remember, but whatever we did, it's worked since then.
Did that have anything to do with nutritional contents? Or?
No, it was just a matter of consumer. It was a kind of a consumer thing, to let the consumer know what they were getting.
Right.
That they weren't getting, you know, a loaf that might be 15 inches long is the same loaf as a 12-inch loaf.
Right.
They're both 1 pound. They're not getting any more bread, and they shouldn't have to pay for more bread.
Mm-hmm.
That's is a consumer legislation is what it was.
The Senate in that term killed the new constitution that had been proposed, and in fact they have been working on that for some time, hadn't they?
Blue Ribbon Committee.
Blue Ribbon
Committee.
You've
got to have a Blue Ribbon Committee. And it was a Blue Ribbon Committee. And that's fairly typical. You know, they talk, and there's been talk since not only Oregon's constitution, but other, in our own national constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really wants to get into it. And that's mostly because there's so much body of law that relates to the constitution as written.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you're going to rewrite the thing, you change all the all the ground rules on the law. And there's always somebody that's got some particular part of the Constitution they like as it is. They don't want anybody changing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they just, it's just, there's so many points of potential disagreement that the chance for any constitutional reform taking place is just doesn't exist. Now, when I say that, I mean in a wholesale form. We've changed our Constitution.
Sure.
A little here and a little there and a little here and a little there. And just most recently, they were going to try to put in the Constitution about homosexuals. So, you know, we've done it a piece at a time, but to take the whole document and now change the whole document, that's never going to happen. I don't care what Blue Ribbon Committee you pick. And they were good people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did that come before the House? Was that an issue that was debated on the floor? Or was the new Constitution debated on the floor?
I don't remember that. I know that there was had no chance.
Uh-huh.
They had the Blue Ribbon Committee in joint session, made their report, and it was a big deal. Incidentally, we should bounce back just briefly to the 1959 session.
Mm-hmm.
I say that too because in joint session, and I was in the House at the time, Dr. Sly, who was a tax expert, came and made a presentation to the joint session of the legislature. And the thing I remember, I still have his report in 3 volumes. They're paperback, 8.5 by 11 pages. But the thing I recall is he was saying that when the state budget got to $300 million, that the state would need a new form of taxation.
Hmm.
Now, you have to understand, we've long exceeded $300 million biannual budget.
Yeah.
This is $300 million for 2 years. We've long exceeded that one, but we're still on the same tax system, basically the same tax system we were then. But I recall that. That was 1959 session. Now we go back to 63.
Well, there was an approval for the beginning of the Department of Commerce for the state. Was that Ludeman?
That's right.
That was doing that?
Yeah.
What was he like? What was your impression of him?
Very, very kind man.
Mm-hmm.
Very soft-spoken person. Well, I guess that's pretty much it. That's the kind of a guy he was.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Was there a need for the Department of Commerce at the time?
I think then there was, and there still is, although Neil Goldschmidt wanted to get rid of it and did.
He did get rid of it?
Yeah.
And did was it brought back? Or
no, it's still out there.
What was his reason for wanting to get rid of it?
Well, I don't really know, but there was a lot of people who didn't particularly care for it because that's where all the licensing bureaus and the permitting were done, and people just oftentimes wouldn't get their license or wouldn't get them in or whatever, and so they're angry with whoever it was involved in the Department of Commerce.
Uh-huh.
So it was a target for special interest that didn't happen to like whatever it was that was going.
Mm-hmm.
I had two people as a governor. One was Jane Houston, did a super job for me. And then later on, Fred Hurd, who also did a very fine job for me. And we really improved the operation of that department immensely. But yes, I think that there was a good reason for it then, and I think there's a good reason for it now, although Neil Goldschmidt, for some reason, decided he, you know, it's fairly typical. You know, one of the things you do is that you just make motions. You change things. That doesn't mean it's good. You just change them. And somehow people think that's good. I think that's part of what you get around to meeting. Well, never mind. We'll talk about Goldschmidt. He's not my favorite governor. By quite a long shot, I would add.
Well, we'll have a chance to talk about that, I'm sure. The House defeated a Department of Natural Resources during the same session. Was that a wise move?
I think so, because I even considered it as governor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I really was operating on the theory, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it is working real well. But there was a need to coordinate. And I think that was, of course, one reason to have a department. We were able to accomplish that by cabinet meetings. I'm bouncing to the governorship, but I had cabinet meetings three days a week. And I would have different agencies. They were grouped. But I did have natural resources as one group. And that's where coordination came in. Mm-hmm. And it worked very well without having a department.
But there wasn't an agency for Department of Resources. It was a grouping of agencies.
No, I would
just
bring in natural resource agencies into my cabinet meeting. So they were all in the room together, DEQ and Fish and Wildlife and Forestry and LCDC, and I have to think through the whole of them, but they were all there in the room at the same time.
Is it or was it easy to delineate between departments that are handling natural resources? I mean, I would imagine that sometimes it's probably a vague definition as to whether it's a natural resource or not. Like LCDC, for instance, is.
Yeah, but they get involved with wetlands.
Yeah.
And you have geology and mineral industries, mm-hmm. and they dig. People dig holes in the ground, and you got to fill them up, So there's need for the agencies per se, but the whole point was to coordinate whatever they were doing.
Sure.
For example, what forestry does, it does affect what happens to the fishery. We know about that. You know, muddying the streams and log jams and things of that kind. That's only by way of passing. So the point was that there was some really need for coordination and understanding how one agency does would affect another agency.
Mm-hmm.
All of that developed during my period of time while I had these cabinet meetings. I had heard that Straub never had the agencies in. Never. Nor did Goldschmidt. Matter of fact, Goldschmidt didn't talk to hardly anybody. But it was marvelous to see this all happen. They get to call each other by their first name. They began to realize what they were doing, and oftentimes would call, mm-hmm. "I'm going to do this,"
mm-hmm.
you know, and already knowing now that this is going to affect.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. This is only an aside in terms of what a cabinet could do, but to show you that with the dimensions, Department of Veterans Affairs dealt in multi-millions of dollars, big sums. We also had the housing division, and they were dealing with bonds, but at a much, much smaller level. But what the Department of Veterans Affairs was doing would affect the ability of the housing department to sell their bonds. So it's just, you know, even when you take something small like housing versus Veterans Affairs, it did have some effect on them. And it's just a matter of this big housing, Veterans Affairs, they wouldn't even pay attention to housing, or even know they're there, because obviously they got a big job to do. But all of a sudden they sit there and realize what they're doing does affect this other agency. Those are the kinds of things. That's a small airplay, but that's the kind of thing that happened. But we'll get back to what number you're still, get back to 63.
Okay. The paper, one of the papers, I'm not sure whether, I think this is the Oregonian, said that one of the biggest legislative fights occurred over a bill to give insurance companies a piece of the industrial accident business, increase benefits 20%, and cover workers in all industries. The Senate passed it, but the House defeated it. Do you know why, the reason for defeating that bill? Or what the discussion or the debate was?
Okay, what we're talking about, what we call three-way workers' comp.
Three-way worker comp.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that was then involving that it was, see, the state was the sole seller of workers' compensation insurance. This issue had been around even before I came to the legislature. Mm-hmm. And labor was adamantly opposed to it.
Why?
Well, I think maybe because it was very sloppy operation, and they're really milking, their workers were milking the system rather efficiently. And they didn't want any change from that. And they figured that if the insurance companies came in, they need to be concerned about a profit. Mm-hmm. And of course, their argument was that it's going to be the profits could come at the expense of the injured worker. You can hear that argument coming, but that's where they were coming from. But that had been around, the three-way workers' compensation, which meant the state, mm-hmm. private insurance, or self-insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Self-insurance would be that was defined in terms of the size of a company, like a Weyerhaeuser, for example. If they want to institute self-insurance, they're big enough to carry it, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing. And I'd have to guess that labor just pure and simply defeated it. Now, this issue came up again in 65. And if you want to talk about that now or 65, it didn't make a difference to me, but it did pass in 1965.
Right, I see that. I see that we have this under our.
Okay, we'll get to it. We'll get to it in an orderly way.
Okay. Well, labor referred to the legislature as being rather conservative, and the worst in many years. Was that a result of this particular debate?
Oh, it could be that, maybe some other issues. Uh-huh. Actually, labor was kind of funny. They'd come some of the craziest bills you'd ever look at. These would be passed in their convention, and of course their leaders are supposed to push for them in mm-hmm. the legislature. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were not productive.
Well, one of the things they were pushing for was the minimum wage of $1.25 an hour, and also a to ban importation of workers to replace strikers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And apparently that lost, didn't it?
Yeah.
Both of those. But they did get their bill passed to prevent employers from using lie detectors. That was a big issue, wasn't it?
Yeah. I say yeah, sort of half-heartedly. Mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal. But they had a whole lot of them, and they'd lose a lot of them. And some of them, they didn't care whether they lost or not, but they had to go and fight for them because they wanted to retain their leadership in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Public employees got the right to bargain collectively. had there been any state employee strikes that had at that point, or?
Well, I know it came awfully close while I was governor.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. I'm trying to recall. I think there may have been a day or two under Neil Goldschmidt. I can't recall. It seems to me they came closer than even I did. I came close. To the point, incidentally, I was going through some papers. We have a rather large contingency plan in the event of a public employee strike.
Hmm.
But unless it happened under Neil's administration, it's come close several times, but I don't think it's actually occurred.
I noticed that there was a bill to remove the death penalty, which was put on the next ballot. Wasn't there an issue about that time about Governor Hatfield commuting the sentence of somebody, or?
I vaguely remember that,
yeah.
But not enough to even talk about it.
Was the death penalty debated?
He was opposed to a death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was part of his religious convictions,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, he's just opposed to it, yeah.
Uh-huh. And how did you feel?
I support death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you talk about philosophy. My position was, it wasn't that I really wanted to kill anybody, that is, execute someone. I really believe that the presence of a death penalty is a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to save a life, not lose a life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, and I had to face it because it was law when I was governor. So I had to make a decision, you know, what am I going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get to that.
Okay. Beaches, ocean beaches were declared recreation areas. And we've talked a little bit about this, the beach laws really were not in one term, they were sort of over a number of terms. And when the ocean beaches were declared recreation areas, was there a definition at that point as to what the beach consisted of? Because this became important.
I know the issue. I know what we did about it.
Uh-huh.
But I can't recall at what point. And I know Lee Johnson was involved in it because
mm-hmm.
at that point, we actually did it by describing, we went beyond vegetation line. I mean, I don't mean the beaches went beyond it. We got into more descriptive latitudes, longitudes, and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To say, this is it, this is public, this is what the beach is.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't recall at what point this all occurred.
The Legislative Council Committee was given power to review rules and regulations of state agencies. What was the domain generally of the Legislative Council Committee?
Basically, to write bills for the legislators, to write amendments for
uh-huh.
them. These are all lawyers. You would pre-file if you wanted it, or actually any bill would go to legislative council. And I'd say, I got an idea, I want to do such and such, and then they'd put it in a bill form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in this case, they were given the power to review rules and regulations of state agencies.
Yeah.
That seems like a much bigger...
You bet it's bigger. Actually, from what I understand, that if we take the books of the Oregon Revised Statutes, they probably would cover, I don't know, maybe 3 feet
mm-hmm.
on a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules and regulations that relate to the laws that are written are twice that size.
Hmm.
And you would get to a point where you believe that the rules actually would subvert the laws that you pass or go beyond the laws that you pass.
Mm-hmm. So was this done as a way of assisting the legislature in?
No, it was a matter of protecting the people.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
You know, I know what I had in mind, but that's not what's happening.
Right.
Right.
Another odd thing that happened here was that there was an anti-obscenity law which was made to apply to movies. Do you know what precipitated that? Was there a specific...
No, but I'm smiling. I don't think it passed. I don't recall whether it did or didn't.